Hello and welcome to another edition of the Scarlet Nation podcast. I'm Bobby Durf for the 24/7 Sports Network. Here on Scarlet Nation, we're talking Rutgers basketball. Another exciting week. No basketball, but a lot to talk about. The transfer portal frenzy has a lot of movement going on. Guys going out, guys coming in. We're going to try to sort out the latest and run down what to expect in the coming weeks for Rutgers basketball. So helping me out is my man Chris Tsakonas, who talked to Rutgers' newest commit extensively this past week, Zach Martini from Princeton, forward who looks like he's you know, will be a nice fit, not a huge scorer, not a double digit scorer, close to it, but played a good role at Princeton. You know, looks like he can hit the outside shot consistently. And Chris, welcome aboard. Thanks for joining us again. And you know, when you spoke with Zach, what was kind of the tenor of the conversation about him, you know, coming on at Rutgers?
Well, I think the one theme that I thought was very interesting going in was just, you know, the desire to sort of mentor this young incoming class. I mean, he talked about, you know, playing with Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper and the opportunity that provided. But this is someone who, you know, has played, would have been 4 years if the Ivy League didn't cancel the 2020-21 season because of COVID-19. But he played three seasons at Princeton. Here's a guy that worked his way up to being a starter on that team in the last year, was part of an Ivy League championship team that then went on to make the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. So this is a guy that knows how to win, knows what it takes to win, and he's really eager to step into that role as sort of a veteran leader and someone who can sort of mentor. And he said, you know, these guys are great talents, but, you know, they're going to need someone to sort of guide them who has been there in college basketball. And Zach Martini is someone who has been there in college basketball. So I think that even beyond just what he provides as a player, and I do like a lot of aspects of his game, you know, I think that's really going to be the key thing, is just having someone to sort of guide and mentor these guys. And I think that that's going to be a very valuable addition in that regard.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, he's been there, played in some big games, and Princeton has always been, you know, one of the top Ivies. Last season, Chris, you know, averaged 8.4 points per game, but also 38.5 from three-point range. And I don't remember a Rutgers guy, a forward that big, who was that consistent from three-point range. You know, it does a lot of other little things defensively, but I think you really made a good point in helping these younger guys mesh, because as we saw with that Kentucky team who was bounced in the first round, they were full of young talent, but they were young. So, you know, grabbing him, it just seems like a Pikul type guy, and he's very particular about who he goes after in the transfer portal. That's why you don't hear, you know, an onslaught of names. They will look into certain people and inquire. Now, the NIL kind of limits them from going after the top guys, but I think even if Pikul had unlimited expenses, I don't think he'd see him going for those top guys that cost an arm and a leg. I think he's more concerned with, you know, the cultural fits. Not saying they wouldn't go after, you know, guys that were considered more elite players, but I think he places a strong emphasis on culture and meshing, and I think that's key, because Chris, you're only going to have Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper for probably one season.
Yeah, I would say it's a virtual certainty that you're only going to have them for one season. I think they're just that level of talent, which I would argue is a good thing, because, you know, when you have a guy, in this case, two guys that are really able to play at that level and go on to the NBA after 1 year, that means that you've got players that can come in and really make an impact right away at the Big Ten level. And even a lot of highly ranked guys don't necessarily come in and do that. So I think that that is really exciting for Rutgers. And to go back to your point, Bobby, you know, Rutgers is, as you said, on the more particular side. There's a reason why we haven't seen a ton of names sort of linked with Rutgers. You know, And I think that, you know, with the center position, I think, you know, people are understandably getting a little antsy about the fact that, you know, Rutgers hasn't been, like, officially linked with any particular center. But that doesn't mean necessarily that no one's being contacted, no one's being looked into. A lot of that stuff is happening really behind the scenes, and really, you know, I still think the staff is sort of going through that. And I do think that now that you have a forward and you've got a guard in Tyson Acuff, you can really lock in on that center position. That is by far the biggest need left for Rutgers in this transfer portal offseason. If you can get another shooter, that would obviously be a huge help. But you really need to find a veteran, experienced center Doesn't have to be someone that put up, you know, massive numbers. Doesn't have to be someone who's coming from another high major program. Just someone who can sort of man the middle. Because remember, the bulk of your offense is coming from Mason Dillon. Everything else sort of flows beyond that. So I think that's where Rutgers is as far as the center is concerned.
Yeah, and I think we'll see some more movement in that coming up. And I know it's a priority now that, you know, there needs to be another big man in there. So I'm expecting that to be the next point of emphasis moving forward. But there was another commitment out of the transfer portal. Tyson Acuff comes from Eastern Michigan. You look at his numbers, Chris, across the board, 21.7 points per game, a lot of points, you know, 43.3% shooting. But, you know, I'd caution to look at the Eastern Michigan schedule and results. And, you know, they only won six games in the MAC. They were blown out of their share. Biggest win came against Akron this past season. But, you know, somebody's got to score on that team, right? I mean, 21.7 points a game, that's a lot of points. So he looks like, you know, more of a scorer that's not going to be a perimeter guy, can hit some shots from the outside, but it's not typically a sharpshooter. But, you know, I think it'll be a nice compliment coming off the bench. Another veteran guy can bring a veteran presence. And Pike's not going to bring a veteran guy in here who's going to disrupt the chemistry. So when he zeroed in on him, you know, there's something in those conversations that he liked, that he felt that really could benefit Rutgers. And I think he can use a lot of different lineups and work him in more so than the maybe, you know, 10 minutes per game available behind Harper, and use some different lineups. And you know, Pike likes to be creative with his lineups, Chris.
Yeah, and I think having that flexibility next year is going to be huge, because you've now got three guards who, you know, you can sort of rely on to be in that sort of starting role. You've got obviously Dillon Harper, you've got Jeremiah Williams, and now Acuff's a guy that, you know, he's not going to average almost certainly 21 points a game at Rutgers. But the good news is he doesn't have to, because like I said, you've got Dillon Harper, you've got Jeremiah Williams, you've got guys who can score. And I think he's going to complement that really well. I am also interested in seeing how his efficiency numbers change, because he was, if you look at his usage at Eastern Michigan, very high usage rate, someone that the offense really went through him. And I'm curious to see, you know, does his efficiency go up if he's in more of a tertiary role? I think that's really going to be an interesting thing to watch. But I like to pick up, again, this is a guy that's played 4 years of college basketball. You know, he's got a lot of experience in that regard. And, you know, he's a guy that can, you know, perimeter shooting's probably not going to light it up. But again, Rutgers needed guys last year who could finish at the rim, and outside of a couple players, didn't really have that. So now you've got that. It does open things up, I think. And I do think that Rutgers is going to be a better team offensively because of that. So I like the pickup too. I think Rutgers is in a much better spot now than a week ago when we didn't have any commitments lined up yet. So I do think that is going to be a benefit for Rutgers for sure. I like both of these pickups, and I think Rutgers is in a decent spot.
And, you know, one of the areas that Rutgers has really struggled with is getting to the rim. You know, ever since, you know, Jacob Young, you didn't have that guy who can get to the rim at will. And now you have Jeremiah Williams, who does a good job of it. You have Tyson Acuff, who's proven to be a scorer, and Dillon Harper, who's just phenomenal coming in. You know, you're going to have three guys, not to mention Ace Bailey, you know, guys that can get to the basket. It's going to be such a different product to watch, because, you know, how many of those games were people sitting around just waiting for some offense to happen? And I mean, this dates back, you know, even before this past season. So definitely a new and exciting dynamic. And that brings me to the next one I wanted to talk about, Chris. You know, McDonald's All-American game put Ace Bailey and Dillon Harper on full display in front of the entire country. And I mean, you watch Dillon Harper, and I don't think I've ever watched a kid's highlight or games. I actually sitting there watching his games and not wanting them to end, because you want to see him play more. I mean, this kid can just do everything. I know Ace Bailey is in the talk for, you know, the number one ranked spot, which I think a lot of the media talks it up, because, you know, you hear him and Cooper, Ace and Cooper talk about it, and Cooper Flagg, I'm talking about, the number one ranked player in the country. And it doesn't seem like those guys are chomping at the bit, you know, to battle each other. But they do practice against one another, and they will practice again this week, next weekend, I'm sorry, at the Nike Hoop Summit in Oregon. Dylan Harper will be there as well. So another chance for Ace to move up in the rankings. But, you know, putting that aside, it's just Dylan Harper is just a special, special player. The way he plays, I mean, I think fans are just going to be in for a real treat next year from start to finish with when he's in the game.
Yeah, and I think that Ace Bailey, you know, he just brings, you know, almost a flawless combination of skill, of athleticism, of shot-making ability. I know, you know, his numbers at the McDonald's All-American game, you know, weren't the greatest, but I also would say, you know, it's one exhibition game. Don't draw drastic conclusions. Ace Bailey is still a very dominant player. And to go back to your point about Dylan Harper, I mean, you know, co-MVP along with Derek Queen, who's, you know, someone who's going to be going over to Maryland. And I think he's also going to have a lot of success there. You know, I think that Dylan Harper, like you said, complete package, can do a little bit of everything well, has really improved as a defender and has really improved, you know, on the perimeter as well. I think that's an area of his game that he's really worked on. And I do think that you're going to see him really hit the ground running. What I'm interested to see is just how different does Rutgers look offensively, not just in the terms of the talent, but just the way the offense is run, right? Because I have a hard time imagining the offense isn't running through Dylan Harper from a very early stage of the season. I think this is a guy that can really hit the ground running. But, you know, this is someone who's really good at creating for his teammates, putting his teammates in better positions. And I'm curious to see just, you know, how much of an efficiency bump do you get from that playmaking ability alone and that basketball IQ? I think that's going to be an exciting thing to watch. I think that you're going to see a much different Rutgers offense through that alone, in addition to, you know, just the overall talent upgrade. So I'm very interested in seeing how that sort of plays out.
Yeah. And, you know, Chris, you hear a lot of people speculate, you know, these other teams across the country to get top recruits that it just doesn't click right away. And I find it hard to look ahead to next season and not seeing Bailey and Harper just dominate and stand out. I mean, these guys are just elite players. And that's why I feel like it's so important to surround them with complementary pieces. Seems like Pike's doing an adequate job of it now. It's crazy to think what he could do if he had more NIL to it, but, you know, that's a discussion for another time. And you know, staying on the or getting on this topic of NIL in a roundabout way, I wanted to talk about the outgoing transfers that, you know, have left. Six guys from last year's team, six players. That's a lot of players, Chris, that have entered the transfer portal. Antonio Chall has committed to Howard. And then you have Derek Simpson committed to St. Joseph's in the Atlantic 10. Then you have four still on the open market. Hearing a lot about Gavin Griffiths possibly going to Providence. Hasn't happened just yet, but I mean, everything I'm hearing, that's where he's likely going to wind up. But, you know, an eventful offseason, and you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't start with Cliff Amarui. You know, this guy I'm hearing could get upwards of $1 million in the transfer portal, and he's just it's an exploding recruitment since he joined the portal, Chris.
And I sort of expected that coming in, right? This is a guy who defensively is about as elite as they come at sort of protecting the interior, protecting the rim, also a really good shot blocker and can rebound at a pretty good rate. So this is someone who, you know, and the types of teams that are looking at him, you know, I think Kentucky, Kansas, St. John's, you know, a lot of times these are teams that are not going to have to run the offense through him in a way that Rutgers, I think, was sort of trying to do last year. So I think when, you know, people say, well, his offense, you know, I don't think his offense warrants that price tag. I think that's off the mark because that's not what he's being brought in there to do. Because he's going to be surrounded, say, hypothetically, he goes to Kansas, just illustrative there. That's a program where they've got no shortage of people who can score the basketball. It doesn't matter what the year is. It doesn't matter, you know, who specifically stays or goes. It's just that's a program that's always loaded with talent. He would be surrounded in that situation, and I think he would do really well there. And I think there's a reason why you're seeing that. The other thing I'll say, too, just about the price tag is maybe compared to guards or forwards. And this is something that, you know, I think was reinforced when I was researching our center hot board, which you can access at scarletnation.com, by the way, is that once you get out of the top, I'll say five or six guys at the center position, there really is a bit of a drop off. So those top guys, and that doesn't mean you can't get a good center out of there, but the top guys are going to command really high NIL because there aren't that many of them. And there are a lot of teams looking for an elite big. So when you combine those two factors, simple supply and demand, that's sort of how that works out. So I'm not surprised at all that Cliff Amore's in the conversation to get that range of money. And I'm also not surprised at the programs that are looking at him, because I do think his skill set warrants it.
Yeah, and there's not a lot. I mean, might take for granted some fans watching him for 4 years. There's not a lot of people that look like him, that play like him, that are as explosive, and he's just a freakish athlete. But, you know, another name we haven't heard much about, but Watt Magg jumps in the portal, and you're not hearing a lot of buzz, at least publicly, about him. I don't know if he realized, you know, it wouldn't be as busy. There's still interest there, but, you know, he's got an injury-riddled past, and – you know, I just don't think the grass was as green as he thought it might have been.
Yeah, I think I'm really curious to see where he ends up, just to be honest, Bobby, is, you know, because I sort of thought when Watt Mag went into the transfer portal, within a couple of days, you would see like a list of, oh, schools X, Y, and Z have reached out to Watt Mag. I sort of had a feeling the injuries would dampen the interest a bit, but I still thought there would be more than there is. And that's not to say he hasn't received any interest. I'm sure, you know, behind closed doors, he's in talks with some schools. But I really don't know where he's going to end up. I think that's a really good point. And I'm very curious to see how that ultimately transpires, because, you know, I think if he entered the portal last year, he probably would have gotten a lot more interest than maybe he's getting now. And I think we would have heard a lot more interest in that scenario. So, yeah, that's sort of the mystery recruitment at the moment. I'm not really sure where that's going to go, but certainly interesting to see, you know, how that sort of pans out, because there's a guy that I think Rutgers would have, well, I think would have welcomed back if he had wanted to come back.
Right. And you know, I think you can see different trends with the transfer portal. Some guys get in there and they get a lot of interest and, you know, they commit somewhere right away. Derek Simpson had a fair amount of interest, committed to St. Joe's. You know, Anton Wolfolk was getting a lot of interest from MAC schools and some smaller schools. You know, he's a Cleveland native, so, you know, Youngstown States of the world, we're looking at him. But you haven't heard much, you know, since. So I don't hearing is not as much out there for him as he tended to believe. I think he's going to have to settle for a smaller program. Derek Simpson could be in for a nice fit. It's close to home for him, but he's playing on a St. Joe's team that was not very good last year. But it might, the competition level really might free him up to have a much better final 2 years of his college career.
Yeah, I would say out of that sophomore class that went and moved on from the program, I think Derek Simpson's the one who's probably going to have the most success at his next stop. I do like aspects of his game. I do think the Big Ten game sort of, you know, it takes a lot, you know, mentally and physically to sort of compete night and now in the Big Ten. I think that he's better suited for that level, and I think he'll do really well there. I think that also will depend in parts on who he's playing with at St. Joe's. I haven't taken too deep of a dive into their roster, to be perfectly honest. But I do think that's a level of play where, you know, if he finds a good fit, I think he could do pretty well. I do like aspects of his game. He showed flashes of it at Rutgers. It never fully came together to the point where you could rely on him as a, you know, as a regular starter. But I do think there are aspects of his game that could translate well there. So I'm interested in seeing how that ends out.
You know, and Antonio Chaul goes to Howard. And I think, you know, I'm not going to get too deep into him because he barely played at Rutgers. But you remember when he committed, he was part of the 23 class, and Pike talked him into enrolling in part of the 22. So, you know, if he would have stayed that extra year in high school, it could have turned out a little differently for him. You know, that's neither here nor there now, but just something to consider that he was originally, you know, a year behind or a year ahead, whatever you want to call it. He came here early and came here late to Rutgers and really never got his, you know, not off the ground running. But, you know, hopefully he can have some success at Howard, because Pike did like him at the time of his commitment. But and I mentioned Gavin Griffiths as well. It looked like Providence, you know, could be a decent fit for him. Disappointing year at Rutgers. We touched on it before. I just don't think he was a good fit on that team. His style of play for what was needed at that time, it just didn't seem like a good marriage.
No, I think you're right about that, Bobby. And I also say, in general, when, you know, fans sort of look at recruiting, be it high school or transfer portal, I do think there's a tendency to sort of get caught up in the numbers a little bit, and understandably so. You want someone who, you know, is productive, particularly in the transfer portal. But I also think you have to consider fit. There's a reason why with the transfer portal, you know, Steve Peichel's not just, you know, reaching out to everyone under the sun. You know, it's a bit more deliberate, a bit more cerebral. And I think there's a reason for that. I think, you know, Gavin Griffiths is someone who was obviously recruited very highly in high school. I think that rating is largely merited. Now, not everyone in that range is an immediate contributor, and that's not the end of the world. You could still have a good career. I wouldn't shock me at all if he improved significantly and had a productive sophomore year at wherever he ends up, be it Providence or wherever. But like you said, you know, the style of play just didn't really fit. You know, he wasn't the best defender on a defense heavy program. And I think you're right. I think it just wasn't a good fit. And I think that's something to keep in mind going forward. You know, when we're talking about potential recruits, is okay, this guy is ranked here or there, but what aspects of his skill set sort of fit what the program is trying to do? I think that's something that I think gets overlooked when we talk about recruiting rankings and talk about, you know, stuff like that. I do think we get a little too caught up in the numbers. And I do think that, you know, that's sort of an example of what happens when a guy isn't a good fit.
And, you know, there's going to be two more additions, Chris, you know, at least two more transfer portal additions, two spots open. Oscar Palmquist, you know, he's still on the team now, could go home to Sweden and play professionally there. I think with all the transfers, it might make it a little more appealing to come back and be a veteran guy. So that one's still up in the air. So if he goes, though, you could have three transfer portal spots open. But, you know, Jeremiah Williams, Emmanuel Agboli, and Jermichael Davis are staying put. So we should have, you know, more transfer, you know, news this week. You know, there'll be two more spots, like I said, maybe three. But whatever the case, we'll have it for you. We'll have continual updates, and, you know, keep it on scarletnation.com. Join us on the roundtable message board. We'll give you some VIP news, basketball stuff, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For Chris Sakonis, I'm Bobby Darin. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again.